Okay, we are on page 375, 376, the chapter 9. We're on the line, we're right in the middle of the page. The first one line is Al ha'efroichim v'chulu. We're starting v'hine ikr. And in the English, it starts Ava, love, is primarily cleaving on the right side of the page. We are talking about tshuva ilah, the higher level of tshuva, which tshuva ilah is an expression of bina, that when a person has a full understanding of Elokus, and understanding how this is Hashem is your life, then it will arouse a love and fear of Hashem to want to cleave to Hashem from an intellectual perspective. That's what we got up to so far. Ikra ava hu is dveikus rucha berucha. What is love? How do you know that you love Hashem? You say somebody, you love Hashem? Yeah, I love Hashem, sure. Okay, good. How do you know? Because when something that you love, you want to stay close to. Mm-hmm. And the more you love it, the closer you want to stay to it, and the more you don't want to be far away from it. As it says in the famous Shir HaShirim, he kisses me with the kisses of his mouth. That poem that Shlomo HaMelech wrote describes the love of the Jewish people to Hashem and the love of that Hashem has to the Jewish people. And we talk about this Izdvekas Rucha Berichai, so there's discussed in the Kabbalah the idea of like a higher unity, which is called Neshikin, kissing, that there we are stuck, you might say, on Hashem. Okay, that about this type of love, it says, with all your heart, with all your soul, excuse me, that this is beyond v'chol levavacha. V'chol levavacha, with all your heart. So we talked about in previous. You could do that with a teshuva tata. The lower level of teshuva, you could convince your animal soul that, listen, it's really a good deal if you just do the right thing all the time. And you don't bother me so much about all of your mundane physical things. That's the whole of avacha, the whole nafshecha, to the point where it says ad shenitel es nafshei, until you're ready, the person is ready to give his life up. So this is an expression which is much higher, which is when the person realizes what their neshama is. The person realizes that the neshama is Elokus. So then they understand that if they're going to love Hashem b'chol nafshecha, that means they're not giving anything up. Mm-hmm. Because what does it mean if a person's going to be until your soul comes out? So a person loses their soul, klais nafesh with this. It means that it's going to get close. It's going to become totally and completely united with Hashem.
Right.
And so a person's ready to do that because they're not losing anything. My soul is Hashem, and what is going to happen is my soul is going to be connected with Hashem. So there's nothing to lose there. Shehem heim kol chelki hanefesh. That when it says v'chol nafshecha, so it means every aspect of the person's soul. The seichel, the midas, elavushim, machshava, divir, maisa. That means the intellect and the emotions and the thought, speech, and action. L'davka kulam b'yizbarach. That all of them should be cleaving to Hashem. So when a person is at this level of a whole nafshecha, so what is it? So not only is it that the person is always doing the right thing, the person's always saying the right thing, the person's always thinking the right thing, but in addition to that, the person's always feeling the right thing, mm-hmm. and the person is always conceptualizing the right thing. We'll take it one step further, we'll say the person wants the right thing. Meaning to be connected to Elokus.
Sounds like the definition of a tzaddik.
Well, he did say before, well, no, it doesn't have to be. Because the definition, the difference between a tzaddik and a beinoni is not really what they're doing, but what is it that the underlying behind it? So that's where behold, not what a person wants is really going to go more into behold ma'edecha. Because to control what you want, that a person has to work on themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay, I had a whole discussion with somebody yesterday about if you could change your desires. And the answer is, well, I postulated no. He says, wait a minute, before I didn't want it, now I do want it. So what's the difference? It says, I told him, is before you did want it, but you didn't know you wanted it. You have an expression, a person, it's a couple, Rachman Al-Salam wants to get divorced. And the guy doesn't want to give a get. So what do? It says, Kaifin Isa Adshama Ratsani. You coerce him. That's one of those ambiguous words. We're not going to go into that now with all of the current events that are happening. We coerce him until he says, I want to. But tell me, there's another thing. It says a forced get is not a get. Mm-hmm. So what is this? Kaifin Isa Adshama Ratsani. And why is that not a forced get? The answer is because there's a mitzvah. That if a person doesn't want to be married to his wife anymore, it says, v'shalchalava haisala li'ishachir. He's going to send her away. There's a mitzvah there. What person doesn't want to do a mitzvah?
Okay.
Every person, every Jew wants to do the mitzvah. I say, this is one mitzvah I hope never to do, is to divorce my wife. Because it's conditional. It's I don't have to do it. It's if it would be that a person would want to split up his marriage, it'd be a mitzvah to give a divorce. So to tell the guy, listen, I'm putting this in your hand, and I'm holding your hand over your wife's hands, and then I'm opening up your hand so that the get drops into your wife's hand, that's called a coerced get. The guy never said, I want to do this. But what happens if, for example, we coerce him, and whatever it means, it happens to be coercion, is whatever they do. And the guy says, okay, I'm willing to give a get. Mm-hmm. He was willing to give the get beforehand. Because if he wasn't willing to do it, then no matter what they did to him, he still wouldn't do it. When you talk about a tzaddik, for example, you have this story. The Alter Rebbe was in prison, and when they first arrested him, they didn't give him kosher food. So for 4 days, he didn't eat anything, because he didn't have any kosher food.
Yeah.
So the protocol is that after 4 days, the prisoner doesn't eat, they force feed him. So 4 days go by, he doesn't eat, and so four burly Cossacks come into his cell, and they hold him down, and they're going to open up his mouth, and they're going to force food into his face. Okay, so there's a whole commotion going on, and one of the main interrogators comes by and sees there's a whole thing. He walks and he says, what are you doing? This is an honored citizen. He says, you can't do this. So the person, the lowest subordinate says, he hasn't eaten in 4 days, and protocol says that a person's on a hunger strike, we force feed him. Mm-hmm. So the interrogator asks the Alter Rebbe, what's the meaning of this? Why are you starving yourself? You know that you're going to be vindicated. There's no reason for you to go on a hunger strike. Mm-hmm. And he said, you don't understand. They're not giving me kosher food. So they made a whole arrangement with how he was going to get the kosher food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then the interrogator said, I don't understand. The Alter Rebbe, physically in stature, was what you would call a little dude.
Yeah.
He was physically short.
Really?
He was a little guy.
Okay.
And he didn't weigh a whole lot.
So for him to not eat, he's really...
Besides that, yeah, it said when they asked him, what do you want to eat? He said, well, I haven't eaten in 4 days and my stomach won't be able to handle normal food. So they gave him, he said, well, what should we make you then? He said, I want chrain sauteed in honey to strengthen my stomach. Which sounds absolutely wild. I'd love to do it one time, but you know.
Chrain doesn't sound like it would strengthen your stomach.
Oh, definitely it would strengthen your stomach. But anyway, because all of the heat would go into the honey.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what he wanted. So, but the guard asked him, how is it possible if four burly Cossacks could not force feed you? And the Alter Rebbe said, my mouth does not open for non-kosher food. So here it is, they're basically torturing him. And his will is such that I'm not going to eat that food that you're trying to make me to eat. So no matter what they would have tried to do to him, how they would have coerced him, it would not have changed his will to want to eat the food.
Okay.
This person who doesn't want to give a get, the fact that now that he's saying Gratza Ani means he really wanted to do it all along. But what happened? People have Yetzaharas. And the Yetzaharas is covering over, and the job of the Yetzaharas is to prevent the person from doing something right. And so here it is, what we're doing is we're taking away the Yetzaharas and revealing what the guy wants. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would probably be more in the category. That's why the author doesn't list it. Because he says, what's b'chol nafshecha is up to seichel and midos. That even a person feels that he has to be connected to Hashem, and he understands that he has to be connected to Hashem. Okay, his want and desire could be, I'd rather be asleep.
Right.
That's what he really wants. That's what he feels, you know. So, but when you're talking about the whole nafshecha, so it's what he feels is no, I have to be seichel and midos even has to be connected to Hashem. And how does we do that? The Hainu Hamidus be made us of Yisborach Mahu Racham Bechulu. And how is it that we connect our intellect to Hashem? That's an easy one. That he talked about in chapter 5. He talked about it in chapter 41. He talked about it in the last chapter, in chapter 7. You learn Torah. You connect your intellect to Hashem's intellect. That's a simple one. Okay, you just open up a book, and when you're sitting there and understanding what it is it says in this Torah book, so then you're connecting your intellect to Hashem's intellect.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we connect then the midos? So the Gemara answers that question. Mahu rachum avata rachum, mahu chazan avatu chazan. Just like Hashem is compassionate, so you should be compassionate. Just like Hashem is kind, you should be kind. Hashem enclosed the naked. You see that Hashem made clothes for Adam. So you have to supply clothing for people who need clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Hashem fed the Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, so you have to feed people who are hungry. Hashem buried Moshe, so you have to take care of Mace Mitzvahs, etc. So that's going to be the expression of, you know, if you love me, you show me. I love Hashem, okay, show me. Okay, so you'll act like Hashem. As we said before, your intellect with Hashem's intellect, fine, simple. Just learn Torah. That's an easy one. We came machshav to machshav of Yisborah, v'hadibur v'dibur, harizu halacha. And also, as it says, your thought with his thoughts, and your speech with his thoughts, your speech. And what's that? That is halacha. When you're sitting and you're talking halacha, so, if you're sitting and you're talking halacha, so then halacha is the quote-unquote, the speech of Hashem.
I heard someone say once, you're talking about how it says in Shulchan Aruch we're supposed to tie our shoes.
Yes.
Just for example.
Correct.
And they said, you know, people say, it doesn't really matter how we tie our shoes. Yes. Mm. Hashem cares how we tie our shoes.
It wouldn't be Shulchan Aruch. Hashem didn't care.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, so when you're talking about, so now when a person wants to talk, so that's Shulchan Aruch. And it's an interesting thing that when he says if you're going to talk, what is he talk Shulchan Aruch? Why doesn't he say if you talk, Chassidus, learn Tanya Baal Peh? Okay, when he's thinking, see if he's thinking about Hashem. So okay, good. So that you can think about Chassidus. You can think of these deep theological concepts. But the example that he gives of talking the talk, he says the Rebbe in Hayom Yom for Chaf Aleph Kislev says that when a person should have a mind full of Torah by heart. So that when he's in the traveling, when he's in the store, wherever it is, he can do something. What could he do? He can chazer a mishnah. He knows some tillim. This kind of thing, simple stuff. It says because it's specifically the halacha that brings it down here. Right. Halacha is in the world of Asiya.
Rubber meets the road.
Yeah, that's the esoterica. I mean, Tanya is very good. Okay, there's a I got a piece of advice once. I don't know if I told you this. If I'll listen over to all my recordings online and see if I, you know, which stories I told. I'll make a note so I can just say go listen back to December 3rd, 2010. I told the story back then. So when I was in Seattle for 2 years as a bacher in yeshiva, and the yeshiva was geared to work with the community. That was what was expected of us. We were supposed to learn. We were also supposed to help the work with the community. We did Mesibah Shabbos, and we had Chaman Aras stuff going on over there. It was my kvutzigrada that we made the first public menorah lighting in Seattle. It was with my kvutz. I built a 12-foot high menorah over there with storm lanterns, the whole business, got a cherry picker to come in. You know, so we're working with people who would come in and would learn. And there was one family that moved to Seattle. They moved from Crown Heights, and it was a family with two kids. Later, she had a third kid. I used to go there for Shabbos a couple of times a month, and I would say over the Dvar Torah, and I would, you know, talk, learn with them, and was very close with this family. One time, I was in a supermarket, and at the corner of my eye, I happened to catch her walking by.
I don't know the story.
And it was shocking to me because it looked to me that she did not have her hair covered on. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, boy, they're making shaitels look really authentic. This looks like real hair. So okay. Nice. So I said, I got to check this out. So I'm creeping around. I'm kind of like giving the look. I'm like looking at the stuff on the shelf and doing one of these like side numbers, out of, you know, trying to not to get to get caught doing the glancing thing over there. And she came up to me and she said, come to our house for Shabbos. And when I was looking at her straight face to face, I could see she was not wearing a shaitel. And so I said, can I? Meaning, are you still keeping, she understood what I meant. Is she still keeping, she said, yeah, you can still eat in our house. There's no problem, that's enough, anything to worry about. So he came to shul that Shabbos. His beard was trim, and he was wearing a white suit, and he had a knitted yarmulke on. He looked ridiculous, believe me, between you and me.
Did this just happen like overnight?
Well, it seemed like it happened overnight, but I'll tell you soon. I mean, so it was when that final like public declaration was overnight. Because we're gonna make, I'm not wearing the kapata to shul this week. I'm wearing the white suit. The guy had kind of like a darker complexion. So a dark complexion with a white white suit. He looks stupid.
Never Yiddish.
He looks stupid. Okay. I can't. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. Just the fact that he looked stupid. But anyway, so I went to the house and we talked, and then it was very emotional, and they decided that they were finding their level of comfort in Yiddishkeit, and they're moving away to Seattle. They're going to move to the Gush Etzion block in Israel, and that's what they did, and they lived happily ever after. So this bothered me very much. And I went.
They're still from.
They're still from family. Yeah, they're still from, but they're not Lubavitch.
Okay.
So I asked the Mashpia, their label kaplan. I said, I need to talk to you. He says, this is really bothering me. I says, suddenly out of the blue they did. He said, what do you think we're talking about out of the blue? Why do you think they moved 3,500 miles away from Crown Heights? Okay, this is not something that's just happened overnight. This is something that we've been planning.
I think the Mashiach comes and said overnight.
Yeah, yeah. So okay. I said to him, but it bothers me. He says, what bothers you? He says, I've only been from 6 years. They've been from 8 years. So how do I know in 2 years I won't do the same thing?
Oh.
So he said that the fact that it bothers you, first of all, helps. That you're going to take caution. There's a story with the Tzemach Tzedek that a man came to the Tzemach Tzedek, the Zeid Lubavitcher Rebbe, and said, Rebbe, I have sveikus in Amunah. I have my doubts of the existence of God. So the Tzemach Tzedek said to him, so what does it matter? So the man said, Rebbe, I'm Jewish. So he said, if that's the case, then you have nothing to worry about. If it does bother you, then you have nothing to worry about. You know, the sveikos will eventually work themselves out. If it didn't care, and you had the sveikos, so then it would be, you know, it's just the fact that it's bothering you, that's already. And he says, if it really wants some sort of a guarantee, he said, you should learn every day after davening, you should learn Pashut Halacha. He said, take a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and learn for 10 minutes after davening, learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And I said, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is going to keep me from. I said, yeah, you know, if I learn the deep maimarim, these type of things, talk about, you know, the greatness of a godless habera, you know, and Seder Istalshulus and Machshava Keduma Da'ak and all this other stuff going on before Tzimtzum. And he said, no. He says, from studying that, you'll become an academic. And you'll be an Apikoros. You'll be a very smart Apikoros, but you won't be from.
Gotta keep your feet on the
which
ground.
Which really was quite shocking to me, because the only reason why I became from, I took a look at Kitzur Shulchan Aruch before I became from, I was unimpressed.
It's hard to keep.
Yeah, whatever. It was like, well, this is stuff, you know, what if it would have been just, if Judaism would have been Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, I never would have become from.
Well,
it was only because of Tanya that I became from. So I'm thinking, if it's Tanya that got me from, so it's Tanya that's going to keep me from. So he said, no. If you want to stay from, then you have to do Shulchan Aruch. You have to do what it says there.
That's interesting.
Okay, all the minute details. Because if you want to find Elokus, from studying Tanya, what do you come up with? You understand how much you don't know. Because Leif Machshava Tefisa Beklal, no thought can grasp an Hashem. Mm-hmm. And the more Tanya you learn, the less you realize you know.
Yeah, I'm doing it right. Because I've been through a lot, and I started to feel like I don't know what to, I can't teach it. But after the first year of Tanya, I went back and learned Kitzur.
Okay.
I realized if you really want to be close to God, if you want to Tanya,
yeah, so,
you have to walk.
But look in Kitzur. Look at Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. If you're going to do a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you're going to see over there, and you're going to spend time, and you're going to worry about the fact that, you know, oh, I have to make sure I tie my left shoe first, and then tie my right shoe next. So if you're going to worry about such details, so then you don't have to worry about the big things. Am I going to believe in God? Am I not going to believe in God? Am I going to engage in hiddur mitzvah? If I'm not going to engage in hiddur mitzvah, these are all things that are going to come naturally, but you know, because I'm engaging in the little things.
What made me go back was that all those other things don't have any point if you're not doing the normal things.
Yeah. In other words, what's the point of learning Tanya is to be able to appreciate that you put your right shoe on first and then your left shoe and tie your left shoe and then tie your right shoe.
Yes.
That's the purpose. That's what Tanya does. It says, oh, I can understand why this might be the will of Hashem.
It takes the dryness out of halakha for me. That's what
absolutely, totally, and completely.
Maybe
okay, it gives life to it. That's what Chassidus is. Chassidus is the life.
Well, it did it the first year.
So he says, now, we're talking about cleaving to Hashem. We're doing tshuva ilah over here. So here it is. The person has to have his thought, his speech has to be connected to Hashem's speech. And what is he going to do? He's going to talk halakha. That's what he's going to be occupied in his speech. People never saw it in Indian that a person should memorize Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, but we do talk about men as memorizing Mishnayos.
Mishnayos, Tehillim.
Yeah, Mishnayos specifically because it's halacha, and it's the entire halacha is in Mishnayos. Obviously, you can't understand what it's all about, but Mishnayos was meant to learn Baal Peh. I have a friend whose father was, Olav Shalom, was a mail sorter for the post office in New York. And he worked 6 days a week, Saturday night through Thursday night. He worked. And he worked 8-hour shifts. He worked from midnight until 8 a.m. And in the course of a day, he would chazer an entire Seder of Mishnah. So then in the week, 6 days a week, he would chazer the entire Mishnah in a week. Because he said, what is he doing? And they wanted to make him, they wanted to do it to promote him various different times. And he says, no, because then I won't be able to chazer Mishnah, I'll be too busy thinking. about what I'm doing over here. He says, this is like mindless sorting. This goes in this box, that goes in that bag. He says, just going like this, you know, with, you know, throwing with, he's working with his hands. In the meantime, he's chazaring mishnayos.
I used to learn when I worked at Munsta. I actually had a mishnah,
yeah.
I had him at two.
As it says, my words which are in your mouth, and my words which I put in your mouth. And we're talking about connecting your deeds to Hashem's deeds. So that, okay, you could say any mitzvah, but he specifically picks out tzedakah. Now, it does say that tzedakah is keneged kulam. Giving a tzedakah is equal to all mitzvahs. But it says, there's a, it says Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Studying a Rik Torah wake is equal to all. Tefillin is keneged kulam. Sitzes is keneged kulam.
Shabbos.
Shabbos is keneged kulam. Okay, we've got all these keneged kulams. Okay, so it depends what you're talking about, what contents. Okay, here we're talking about a person doing tshuva. And we already talked about several times, going back to chapter 3 of Agaris the Tshuva. The idea of if a person wants to do tshuva properly, so he's not going to fast, so let him give tzedakah. So there, what is that? That's sort of like just getting himself out. That's a compensation. Because since I'm not strong enough to fast, so you know what I'll do is I'll pay for the food that I'm going to eat today. I'll give that to tzedakah. Okay, there's a that's not the tzedakah he's talking about here. That's the tzedakah that a person is saying, well, I could be doing something, so I'm going to give tzedakah instead. Mm-hmm. That's actually of the ways of the, which a person does give tzedakah. So the Rambam would probably count it as sort of like towards the bottom.
Right.
It's still tzedakah, because all the ways of giving tzedakah are still tzedakah. But that's kind of like the bottom. What do I get out of the deal? If a person's saying, what am I getting out of the deal? I'm not going to have to fast. So he's getting something. There's a quid pro quo there, and he's giving tzedakah. And he's figured it out. He's always gecheshbent. That according to him, he should fast, according to the prescription of the Alter Rebbe, 840 times. And there's no way he's going to fast 840 times. So he's going to give 18 whatevers, 18 pennies, the Alter Rebbe suggests, times 840. Good deal. Don't ask me for any more. I gave my 840. So he's got it. This is one of the things I don't like, is when I go and ask somebody for a donation, and they tell me that the accountant says no. It's basically what they say. I've fulfilled my quota for giving tzedakah this year. Come back to me next year. Okay, because what this person has sat down with the accountant, and the accountant figures that according to how much this person makes and the tax bracket the person's in, and the amount that he's going to get off as a deduction from the giving of the tzedakah, so there becomes a certain point where giving more than that doesn't help. You're losing money. So he wants to give tzedakah to maximize the amount of money that he'll be saving.
And no more.
And not a penny more. Okay, so two minishkin taivas. Okay, I'm not going to be. I'm hungry now. You want me to come back in January, but I'm hungry now. Thank you very much. Okay, so that's what he's talking about. That's not the tzedakah he's talking about. The tzedakah that he's talking about is that this person feels is sort of more like the governor that asked Rabbi Akiva. If Hashem loves the poor so much, why doesn't he take care of them? And Rabbi Akiva's response was, he does, through us. So what am I doing by giving tzedakah is I'm taking Hashem's place in this world. I'm not just that I'm Hashem's messenger in taking and giving this person the tzedakah, but I'm Hashem's mali makayim. Hashem could just as easily take this dollar and have it land right in front of him. And the guy's walking in the street and he looks down and he sees a dollar in the street. And the guy will get the same dollar. But like this, Hashem gave me the dollar that I should be able to give it to him. So now I'm taking Hashem's place in the world. And so the person understands. This is, we're talking tshuva law over here, the higher level of tshuva. I'm giving tzedakah because my whole trip is I want to be connected totally with Hashem and everything that I'm my whole persona, everything I'm doing. So why is he giving tzedakah? To emulate Hashem. That's not the same, that's totally different than I'm giving tzedakah in order to get my name on a building. I'm giving tzedakah to redeem me myself from fasts. Because there the person has personal gain from it. Like this, now we're saying that this to the person saying, I'm giving tzedakah so that I should be Hashem's substitute. That's the exact opposite of personal gain. He's giving himself totally away. I'm doing what Hashem, I'm doing Hashem. That's the idea of this, what he's been talking about. He's dveikus rucha barucha, cleaving what you do to Hashem. And that's how the person should be giving tzedakah. Because it says for 6 days Hashem made the creation. Okay. Because 6 days Hashem made the creation. It doesn't say in the verse. What does it mean over here? Why is he bringing this as a pasuk to prove it? It doesn't say in 6 days Hashem made the creation. It says Hashem 6 days made the creation. Meaning that each day was an expression of one of the six attributes. Mm-hmm. And so the first day is an expression of kindness. What's Sunday? Sunday is kindness. That's Hashem's expression of kindness in the world. So what am I going to do now? Is I'm going to take that place of that kindness or that or on Tuesday, that Rachmanis, which is Tuesday is an expression of Rachamim. So I'm going to be the embodiment of Hashem's Rachamim. I'm going to be Mr. Tuesday. And that's why I'm giving tzedakah, because Hashem expressed Rachmanis on the third day of creation. And I'm expressing Rachmanis all the time. So I'm Mr. Tuesday. Okay? V'zuhi zveikus rucha baruchai. B'tachlis ha-dveikus v'hayicha k'shehu machmas ha'ava. This now is a cleaving of spirit of spirit. We're on top of page 378. This is now a cleaving of spirit of spirit on an ultimate level of complete cleaving and unity, which this is an expression of love. So in other words, how do I know I love Hashem? This is, first of all, if I'm checking, then I'm doing the wrong thing. That's always one of those things in explain the Chassidus. If you have to look over your shoulder, then you're not. So, but how do I know that I'm a cleaving to Hashem? Is if everything that I'm doing is connected somehow to Hashem. And that a person make an account. It's Kriya Shema Almita. I woke up this morning. What was my connection to Hashem when I woke up? And I watched Shnagelvasser and I did my whole day and I davened and I went through my day, my work and etc. So that a person looks over and says, yeah. Okay, so now, well, it's true that a Kriya Shema Almita, that the main thing is the person says, man, I could have done a whole lot better. And for sure, that has to be the sach hakel, the final conclusion when a person says Kriya Shema before getting into bed, is tomorrow's got to be much better than today. Because that goes without saying. Because if tomorrow's not better than today, what do you need tomorrow for? You got today already. It's enough. So tomorrow has to be better than today. So the person can look and see, this is what I did. And just like it is, the person says, I didn't do enough, a person should also say, by the way, by Kriya Shema Almita, these are the good things that I did too. There's nothing wrong with a person recognizing their own milos, their own accomplishments. I accomplished this, and I accomplished this, and I accomplished this. It's good if you recognize. You don't have to tell other people about it. Okay, but a person at the same time, it's a Kriya Shema, there has to be a balance. I could have, even though I accomplished this, but I could have done it better. Mm. And tomorrow, Amir Tzashem, I'll do it better. And that's the level of love. Lefi shepagam barua habris v'hitaros levizara v'ezach lamer b'arayis arshar isur biya deraisa derabanan. And since it is, when a person blemished his covenant, that's a real fancy way of saying that he didn't do what he was supposed to be doing properly. Like, with, for example, he masturbated, and for sure, he, or if he did committed some sort of forbidden sexual conduct over there, whether it be from the Torah, whether it be from the Rabbanan, Kimcharim Divrei Seferim, Paygam B'mayach V'Liboy. What does that do? That causes a blemish in his brain and in his heart. For example, this is true with every time a person's going to do a sin, it's going to have a physical effect on a person. A physiological effect. We see that, for example, on the eighth day of the consecration of the Mishkan, not an Avihu ran into the Karchi Kedoshim, they got zapped, they died, they pulled out of there, and Aaron and his sons burnt the Chatas entirely, and Moshe yelled at him, "You did something wrong. How are you talking that you burnt it? Wouldn't we go over that you're supposed to eat from part of it?" So Aaron answered, "An oinan," because they were oinanim, which means a person who experiences the loss of a life, of a loved one that day, is forbidding from eating a surface for karbanos. We had to burn it. We had no other choice. So Moshe went, "Oh yeah, Taka, yeah, I taught you that." Moshe taught that to them.
Yeah.
So how is it that Moshe himself is shrying Melechai V'Kayim? They didn't, you're messing up the Torah, the temple service over here, is because he got mad. The if you want to explain it in physical terms, you could say that when a person gets angry, it releases certain chemicals, hormones into the brain, which have an effect on that part of the brain, which has to deal with memory.
Mm-hmm.
So like this, it's a safeguard. So this way, the person doesn't walk around angry all the time at the same thing. I got angry at that last week. I don't have to get angry at it again. I've been there, done that. Now I got to get angry at another thing.
Right.
Okay. So it causes the anger causes a person to forget primarily why it is that they're angry. So that's where they can be angry. So that way they can be appeased. So when you're talking about something major like this, the Alter Rebbe has been talking about this problem of masturbation because this is one of those problems that. Listen, you know, people are teenagers. You know, Hashem made it such that we're programmed that we have, from the time we're 13 years old or earlier until the time that we get married, is we have this constant and unending drive, which is bothering the heck out of us. And so, listen, you know, things happen. Okay? But it's absolutely 100% wrong. And so therefore, when a person finally gets his act together and wants to correct it, so then he's got to correct it. But he says, and what's going to happen is if getting angry causes a person to forget something that he learned, imagine what's going to be with this, because a person has to use their intellect to engage in illicit behavior.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, I'm glad there are no ladies sitting over here, but there's a, that says in the Gemara, Ein kishoy ela bedas. A person can't have an erection unless they're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it says there, it says a halacha. What happens, a person is about to have relations with his wife. Okay? And then suddenly, a couple of guys come in, and they pick him up, and they throw him out the window. And he lands in a lady, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
So he's guilty of illicit relations because Enki Shoyal Abedas. If it would have been so repulsive to him, he never would have been able to have an erection. The fact that he has an erection means he wants to have one. Then how does he want to have one? Because he's thinking about it. So that's why he's specifically zeroing in on these, because sexual impropriety affects the brain directly. And so therefore, if he's got a problem with his brain, what he's going to do with it? Hey, go sit and learn. Fill your brain up with, fill your brain up with Torah. And the Torah, what will the Torah do? The Torah will brainwash him. Quite literally, it'll wash his brain.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what he says, that he said it before, if he's going to say it again. If a person learned Perek Echad Shachris, Perek Echad Arvis, little more Shnei Prakim Shachris, Shnei Prakim Arvis, to show that it really means business. It says in a part of the Zohar, which is written by Eliyahu, a person does a sin which is, causes him to be culpable to death penalty. What should he do that he should get around it? If he normally read one page a day, let him read two pages. If he normally learned one chapter a day, let him learn two chapters, etc. Like, for example, we gave before, we've been talking about this already for six chapters, that our connection to Hashem is like a rope made out of 613 strands. What happened? This guy did something which would be chayav mis, which means that the whole rope is cut. So what do you do when you got a rope that you need to, and you still, the rope is cut, but you still need the rope? You tie it back again, you make a knot. Mm-hmm. Okay? Very interesting thing about the physics involved over here, which is, it's like, duh, if you, I have thought about half a second, the thickness of the knot is four times the thickness of the rope. Mm-hmm. So the connection that the person makes
stronger
after they did something wrong is much, it's a much greater connection. That's why it says, B'vach m'shabali tshuva imdim. The place where a Baal Tshuva stands is on a greater level than where a tzaddik is, because a tzaddik's got a straight rope. Mm-hmm. This guy's got knots in his rope. There's thick connections all throughout the his whole persona. And so he says, "But makam hakasha hu kaifel mechupel." The place of the knot is quadruple the rest of the note, the rope. So too it is with the rope of his inheritance. That if a person splits some of the strands, let him retie it. That's what the tshuva is. The tshuva is going to retie it. He's going to make it now a greater connection. That's what it says, with kindness and truth, meaning rachmanis, is sin atoned. So that when a person is now on a level of, we're talking about tshuva ilah, and the person has whole being, is totally given over to Elokus in his action, speech, deed, feelings, and thoughts. So now what has happened is that is going to cause Hashem to be mechaper. Hashem will atone him now. Because Hashem sees this guy is the embodiment of me. He's doing what I need to do. So how could there be any type of an interposition between me and him? I'll take away any type of a block. Mm-hmm. I'll remove the stains. I'll take out all the dead wood. I'll prune him down, make him good. That's Hashem's deal. And it says, the Ein Emes El Teira. Easiest way, yeah, sit and learn. Va'avein beis eili b'zevach u'mencha hu de'ena miskaper aval miskaper b'teira g'mils chasadim kibisa b'perek kama d'rosh Hashanah. The sin of Eli, the house of Eli, the sons of Eli,
yeah,
that they used to overcharge people for the sacrifice, they used to charge people to bring sacrifices.
Delay,
and
there was the delay in the the meat first.
Yeah, and they used to have a three-pronged fork instead of a two-pronged fork so they could take a bigger piece of the action. So those guys, it says there's no atonement to them.
Because it says don't think that they sinned. It's the kusarda.
That's another deal. And not only is it, it says that also all of the sons of Eli also die young.
Well, that was the part of the punishment for the... And it switched to Pinchas. The whole called the kahuna.
Mm-hmm.
Went from Melah.
Right, from Eli to Pinchas, yes.
It's huge.
Okay, so that the atonement now, that's for us. Okay, but if a person wants to get atoned, if a person wants atonement, which is what we've been talking about since chapter 2. Chapter 2, I said, don't do anything until we finish the book.
I haven't done anything.
Okay, don't get excited. So there, when he talks about fasting, hundreds of fasts, so you see, it's not the way to go. He says, what's the way to go? He says, first of all, you have to do chapter 7, because this is a tshuva ilah. You're not going to get to this level, the point of feeling like a total connection all the time in your thought, speech, action, emotions, and seichel by getting up and walking out the door right now. First, you have to do the person has to do the tshuva ta. Okay, as described in chapter 7, which we're not going to go right now. And then, when he gets that down, okay, move on. But so what is he, so what is it we're talking about over here? The first thing the person has to do is tshuva, which is a zivas achet and kabbalah lahava. I'm sorry, I didn't till now, and I'm not going to do anymore. That's dover pashut. No matter what madriga a person wants to aspire to, that's the very beginning. That's where they have to start. Because it doesn't help if the person is learning two chapters a day now, and he's still doing the sin. But I'm learning two chapters a day now. Okay, that's called the Tevel V'Sheretz Biyadei. If a person touches a bug, he has to go to the mikveh. But what happens if he takes the bug with him in the mikveh? He didn't let go of the bug. So he goes into the water, and he's taher. As soon as he comes out of the water, he's tameh again. You got to throw the bug away. Okay, and then go teufel. Okay, that talk is hard. Okay, but that's our starting point. Okay, that's what we talked about in chapter 7. To be continued.